What I want to talk about today is optimism, because we seem to have run out of it at the moment. Everybody is blaming everybody. Everybody is miserable. And we've got good reason to be, because we've got 3 years of probably a very crappy government. But our role in that particular time is to try and make it better. And if we carry on the way we're carrying on at the moment, we're just going to add to the general distrust and despair, which is part of the problem that we've got to face. So I want to talk to progressive voters about how we can actually make it better. And I want to start with a couple of good bits of news. There were quite a lot more first preferences for the Labour Party than there were for the LNP. It's just that they picked up a lot of second preferences. If you look at the results, they only really ended up with one extra seat, which is over what they got in 2016. And that's not great, because everybody criticised Turnbull for only just winning. And this lot haven't done much better, but we seem to be cheering, or too many people are cheering them on. The Greens' vote went up. All right, the LNP was elected. But there were a lot of reasons why they were elected, which we can fix. One of the things I've been talking about quite a bit, which is the loss of trust generally. Middle parties are not doing very well in Europe, and they're not doing very well anywhere else as well. The Democrats, look what happened with Hillary Clinton. So I think we need to start rethinking what's going wrong with the political system. And one of the things I think is going wrong with the political system, and I've been talking about this for a while, is an overemphasis on money and economics, and very little vision about where we are. No light on the hill, no sense of where we're going. And I think the Labour Party actually fed into that, despite the fact it thought it had a reformist party base. It didn't. It had a whole lot of policies, very confusing, very hard to follow, which involved putting extra money into things which are generally the status quo, and maybe shifting the balance so that we actually got more money out of people who are better off and could put more money into things like health and education, but not necessarily fixing them, just adding money, like adding money for additional cancer services, not fixing up a private incursions into the healthcare system that was costing everybody else a lot of money, and we really need to take a whole long look at the way the system works, so it's not just cancer patients that we help. The childcare thing was equally messy. I'm not going to go through them all, because there are pages and pages of them, and it was almost impossible for any voter, unless somebody who was really interested, to work out what it was on about. I mean, the trouble was that a lot of people distrusted both parties. A lot of people, a very high number of people, were actually undecided. I think it was 8% in the essential polls. So undecided, they couldn't even answer the question of which party they were more likely to vote for. So that was enough in itself, because if you look at the final results, you know, the Libs ended up with 51% and the Labour Party with 49% votes. That's not a very big difference. And it's well within the margin of errors, and it very much reflects, if you reverse them, the figures that were turning up in many of the polls, which had the Labour Party ahead of the LNP. But since the polls were crap, and the actual samples that they were using were often wrong, and the way they handled them were also wrong, the polls were unreliable. But you had voters believing the polls. There were a lot of voters that believed the ALP was going to win, and I suspect some of them who weren't all that keen on the ALP because they didn't trust Bill Shorten and they didn't really understand what the ALP was offering, really just thought, oh, well, the ALP is going to win, so I'm going to put my votes into the smaller parties. So overconfidence often does destroy things. That's happened before. The people have believed that they're going to vote, so they go, that a certain party is going to win, so they just don't bother voting for them. So that's part of the fact. And in a very small margin like the one that happened here, I think we can actually assume that maybe the loss of those votes, plus a few seduced by Palmer's crap and other things, were enough to create that sort of shift. If you look at who voted for what, what's really interesting is a lot of the higher income, better educated parties voted for Labour. And actually it was the low income, lower educated people who were scared, who ended up voting for ScoMo. Why did they vote for ScoMo? Because he was positive. He was making all these statements like Trump did about making Australia better. Australia was okay and it started. So he gave them optimism. So I think a lot of those really uncommitted voters ended up voting for the LNP, which probably was enough to push them over the line. So these are not insurmountable barriers. They're not something which suggests that we should be giving up on trying to get progressive policies up. But it does mean we've got to take a very good long look at what we're doing, at what we might be doing wrong, and maybe what we should be doing. Now, number one, I would like to say is that we need more unity across the progressive sector. Have a look at the right wing. They've got two flanks. One is the arch conservatives, where you do what you're told, and the other one is the neoliberals, which means you don't want any government thing, so you've got certain things that bind you. But when it comes to the crunch, they all vote for the LNP. You've got the situation amongst the left, which, as usual, we are bickering, we're fighting, we're accusing each other of being impure in terms of the way we're thinking about things. We're often attacking each other for not being radical enough. And what you get is a sense of disunity. We have to bring ourselves together so we are actually offering visions that people can relate to, but also a sense that we want a progressive society. I go back to the fact we live in a society and not an economy, and I think that might be a counter to some of the distrust stuff that's happening. I think we've got to really think through what we're going to do next. As I've said, we start with unity. We actually start looking at how we can do policies that catch people's imagination, that make people feel good. If you go back and have a look at the Whitlam stuff, that's what was there. If you have a look at Hawke and Keating, and there's been a lot of fuss about them, they had a very clear vision of where we were going. We might be critical of that. But they said, OK, we work with business, but at the same time we bring in the social wage. So we got Medibank, so we got Super, which has got other problems, but that's another issue. There were various things where the social and the economic were mixed. Going into this particular election, it really wasn't mixed. There was nothing about welfare. There was nothing about privatisation. There was nothing about the things that really irritate people when they see government is no longer involved in providing things. I think we've got to sit down and do some really hard work. But remember, we only just lost. They only just won. And it isn't going to take very much if we get our act together and don't start cutting away the good things that are on offer, but start making them a coherent narrative. Start telling the story about the sort of Australia we would all like to live in, then I think we've got a serious chance of actually knocking that lot off. And in the meanwhile, we're going to hassle them and try and make sure that they do as much as they can not to destroy what remains of a good society, because that, I think, becomes the crucial question.